Success comes from not me being quiet and sitting still and doing what I'm told. Success comes from finding situations that reward you for who you are instead of punishing you for who you are. But we're not seeking out those situations if we're still trying to fix, you know, those apparent flaws.
And today we have David Rendell.
One of the big things we do to try to shut people down, especially in the workplace, is we say, you know, Ben, I just need you to be professional. And what I love about that is you just brought up musicians. Okay, should I be a professional like a musician's a professional? And should I wear cut, torn jeans and a ripped t-shirt and bite the head off of a bat on stage and do cocaine? Professional is determined by the situation we're in. And when somebody says be professional, what they're saying is I want you to behave the way I want you to behave, and I want you to meet my standard of appropriate. But that standard changes wildly whether you're on stage, whether you're on the football field, whether you're an accountant, whether you're a professional speaker, fill in the blank.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Real Business Connections. This is 15-Minute Friday, easy to implement business tips for busy people. I am your host, Ben Albert, and today we have David Rendell on the show. David, what's happening, man?
I'm just impressed you said it right. Almost everybody says it wrong at every speech I ever give, and you nailed it the first time, and you didn't even have to ask me. So I am very impressed. We're off to a great start already.
I'm breaking a sweat. I don't know if my eyes went back and forth, but I forgot to ask you, so I could have butchered it. And if anyone doesn't know David yet, quick introduction. He has spent the last 20 years speaking across every inhabited continent to clients like the U.S. Air Force, Australian government, Fortune 500 companies, including Microsoft and AT&T. He's also an endurance athlete, a former professor, stand-up comedian. And lastly, many of other things, he's authored multiple books, one of which is he co-authored with Stan Phelps. Stan Phelps has been on the show twice. Pink Goldfish, that's how I first heard of David. And he's very well known for The Freak Factor. So that is a quick introduction for the listener that doesn't know you yet. Is there anything I miss, though, man?
I'm a giant, 6'6", which sometimes people are like, I know taller people like on the NBA or whatever. And it's like, yeah, they're in the NBA. So even I don't always feel that tall. It just feels normal to me. But 6'6" is 99th percentile. So people don't make pants for me. I hit my head a lot. And I hardly ever see anybody my size, which again is an unusual sort of situation. And that kind of ties into the freak factor being different, being unusual. So I feel normal, but I'm definitely not. And I always know that once we take the group picture, that's when I realize how weird I am and what I actually look like next to regular people.
The tall guy in the pink suit. That helps you really stand out.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's get started with a quote, a tweetable. I don't know if you call them tweetables anymore, exables, something that we can write down and kind of set a standard for the conversation. What's on your mind?
This one's probably maybe a little too long to be tweetable, but you could probably take the first half. But the way I close all my speeches is with a quote from E.E. Cummings, and he says, "We do not believe in ourselves until someone reveals that deep inside of us something is valuable." And so you could stop there. Worth listening to, worthy of our trust, sacred to our touch. So what I tell people is that the freak factor shows people that not only is there something inside of them that's valuable that they didn't know about, that it's actually usually that quality, that weakness that they're always trying to fix, that their parents told them about, that their friends tell them about, that their spouse tells them about, that their children complain about, that their manager puts on their performance review, that those things oftentimes that we think are our worst qualities are actually our best. And so my role is to be the person who reveals to people that deep inside of them something is valuable and maybe the thing that they have thought is the most worthless thing about them. And what I hope people do when they leave, which we can talk about this more specifically, but is then they become those people as well, right? That with their kids, they reveal that something's valuable that their child thought was worthless, that they reveal as a manager to one of their employees that something is valuable they used to think was worthless. They have a better relationship with their partner or their spouse because they're someone who sees strength where everyone else sees weakness. So Yeah, we do not believe in ourselves until someone reveals that deep inside of us something's valuable, worth listening to, worthy of our trust, sacred to our touch.
Love it. Let's dissect this a little bit, because you basically said my weaknesses could possibly actually be my greatest strengths.
Right.
What do you mean by that? That seems counterintuitive at first listen for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, it's even counterintuitive once you do listen to it. So the simplest version is the way I discovered this was it happened to me, right? So this isn't I read in a book or somebody told me once or I went to a retreat, right? I was always in trouble when I was a kid and as an adult because I couldn't sit still and be quiet and do what I was told. And then as an adult, later on, I got paid to be a professional speaker, right? I get paid to stand up, not to sit down. I get paid to talk, not to be quiet. And I get paid to run my own business, not to do what other people tell me to do. So what I learned from me was that my weaknesses were strengths. And then I started wondering if other people had weaknesses that were also strengths as well. So for me, that's a quick version. Couldn't sit still, but that's because I'm active. Couldn't be quiet. That's because I have something to say. Couldn't do what I was told. That's because I want to be in charge. That's why I'm an entrepreneur. That's why I run my own business. That's why I run a business where I work primarily on my own. So I don't have to interact with a lot of other people and explain what I'm doing or why I'm doing it or those kind of things. But a more generic example is like, if I ask somebody what's their biggest strength and they go, I'm persistent. You know, and then I go, okay, what's one of your weaknesses you're always working on? They're like, well, my spouse thinks I'm stubborn and my kids think I'm stubborn and my boss thinks I'm stubborn and I know I'm stubborn. And then you explain to them, yeah, guess what persistence is? It's sticking with things longer than most people think is reasonable. That's why we call it persistence. And guess what stubbornness is? It's sticking with things longer than most people think is reasonable. That's what stubbornness is. Stubbornness and persistence are the same thing. It's just whether somebody chooses to value it about you or not, or whether you choose to value it about yourself or not. It's whether it works or not. When you're persistent and it works, we call it persistence. When you're stubborn and it doesn't turn out, we call it stubbornness, right? But it's always persistence. And so once people can start seeing that, and there's 52 examples I have of those on a simple, worksheet that I do with people where they can pick their strengths and weaknesses and see where they're connected. Then people start to go, oh, right. I'm detail oriented. And then people call me a perfectionist, but they value it when the details need to be managed, but they get frustrated when they want me to hurry. And even that perfectionist, let's just stop right there. We take the word perfection. Ben cares about perfection. Well, that sounds pretty good. And then we just go ist, and now you suck, right? And you need to fix this. And you've got some kind of deep problem and flaw in who you are because you care too much about perfection. Well, what's too much about perfection? Who decides? What's the blood test? Do you want your air traffic controller to be a perfectionist? Do you want the guy at UPS to deliver 99% of the packages or 99.99999% of the packages? Do you want the air traffic controller to land 98 out of 100 planes every day? Is that the level that you're looking for? And so that's the other key piece, is that it's the situation that oftentimes determines whether people see it as a strength or the weakness. And so success comes from not becoming less stubborn. The success comes from not me being quiet and sitting still and doing what I'm told. Success comes from finding situations that reward you for who you are instead of punishing you for who you are. But we're not seeking out those situations if we're still trying to fix, those apparent flaws.
This is powerful. I'm imagining, telling a musician not to color outside the lines is going to inhibit them possibly, but to tell a surgeon to do surgery outside of the lines would be a bad position to be in.
And then sometimes we need people to change the surgery, to try it a different way, True. To discover something new. And yet, every time we don't want somebody to go, I'm excited because I'm going to break all the rules in this appendectomy. It's like, we got it pretty much figured out and maybe you could stick with it. One of the big things we do to try to shut people down, especially in the workplace, is we say, Ben, I just need you to be professional. And what I love about that is you just brought up musicians. Okay. Should I be a professional like a musician's a professional? And should I wear cut, torn jeans and a ripped t-shirt and bite the head off of a bat on stage and do cocaine? How professional would you like me to tackle people at work like a professional football player and wear tight pants and a helmet? professional is determined by the situation we're in. And when somebody says be professional, what they're saying is, I want you to behave the way I want you to behave, and I want you to meet my standard of appropriate. But that standard changes wildly, whether you're on stage, whether you're on the football field, whether you're an accountant, whether you're a professional speaker, what for fill in the blank, right? And so we can't allow sort of generalized rules of good and bad behavior and strength and weakness and right and wrong to kind of guide us in any particular situation. We need to say, who am I? What are the upside and downside of that? And how do I put myself in situations that put the spotlight on the best things about me? And how do I put myself in situations where the worst things about me not only don't matter, but are actually positives, right? And not only are people not complaining about them, they're praising me for the thing that I would normally be criticized for.
The how do I put myself in the right situation insight, that stands out to me, because who I am, I might just be in the wrong environment, the wrong role, and my what real people see as flaws in this role is going to make me succeed if I just pivoted somewhere else, correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest one, right? We think that personal development, self-improvement is about changing who I am, and it's not. First of all, people don't change that much. I have a master's in counseling psychology. I have an undergraduate degree in counseling psychology. And the biggest insight I got after 6 years was people don't change that much. Even if someone's got a problem that's bothering them so much that they try to fix it, they go to self-help books, they take online courses, they read books, they talk to their friends, they talk to their families, they meditate, fill in the blank, they try to fix it, they can't. So they go to a therapist and they give the therapist money and say, I need your help with this. What I learned as they train you to be a therapist is they still don't want to listen to what you say, and they're probably not going to change in any substantial way, because we don't really change fundamentally who we are. I can change my behavior, but I can't become a person who doesn't want to be active. I can change my behavior and not fight you when you ask me to do something, but I still don't want to do it. And I don't generally want to live my life in a situation that hasn't changed after 50 years of life, that I want to do what Ben wants me to do, right? And so the fundamental goal of most self-improvement is just wrong. It's change who you are and some find what's wrong, find your deep-seated. And it often becomes this search for wrong, this search for weakness, this search for flaws, as though that's really, don't, you know, watch out for your Achilles heel and you're only as strong as your weakest link and all these kinds of things. Instead of saying success comes from changing where you are, not who you are. I had a guy in Western Australia, if you know anything about your geography, there's only one major city in Western Australia. It's called Perth. It's about as far away from every other major city in Australia as LA is from New York. It's the complete opposite side, and it's the only real major city on the western side of Australia. And it takes you 5 or 6 hours to fly there from the eastern side. And we were in this tiny little community outside of Perth, which is already not huge. And he comes up to me and he's like, I like what you said, but like, I'm into fashion and I'm a big weirdo. I live in a small town and everybody else, you know, wears jeans and t-shirts and they work on cars and they're engineers and mechanics and they're blue collar people. And they all think I'm a big weirdo and they don't care about what I care about. And they think something's wrong with me and they're trying to change me. And you're saying nothing's wrong with me, but nobody likes me and nobody's encouraging me and everybody thinks I'm broken. And so I said, well, where's the fashion capital of Australia? And he's like, well, either Melbourne or Sydney. And I said, if you went there, would you be a gigantic weirdo? And he said, no. So if you went there, could you find people who cared about what you care about? Yeah. Okay. So I don't have solutions of how do you get people in a town of 1400 people to get excited about your love of fashion. I don't have a solution for that. Right. But the solution is not to change who you are, but to change where you are. And when you go to that place, Melbourne, Sydney, whatever, that bigger city where fashion is a thing, now you're successful. When you used to be a failure, you're right. When you used to be wrong, you're happy. When you used to be unhappy, you have friends. When you used to be lonely, but you're the same person, right? And in fact, you probably become a better person because you get to start developing those things about yourself that you've been pushing down for so long. So yeah, the fundamental, you know, the most important thing is we don't get an opportunity to amplify, to turn up the volume on who we are until we put ourselves in situations that give us the freedom and reward us for being who we are.
I Love this. So we don't need to be fixed. We're not broken. We just need to amplify ourselves, give ourselves the freedom, the circumstance, the culture around us to succeed. So let me ask you this as we start to close out, how do we do that? I know we could probably do a whole 8-hour podcast on just this, but how do I get started to possibly recognize what people have been calling a flaw and kind of rewire my mindset and actually treat that as an opportunity? Like, you tell me, what do I do next?
Yeah. So the two pieces of the model are kind of think differently about yourself and others, and then act differently, right? And part of thinking differently is understanding, well, how are those weaknesses and strengths connected? If I don't know what the upside is, I don't have anything to amplify, anything to align, right? So the beginning is, and in the book, there's a simple assessment where you pick your strengths and you pick your weaknesses, and then you see how they're connected. You see that persistence is stubbornness, as one example, as we talked about. So once you have that, I'm critical and judgmental, but that's because I'm analytical and rational. So once I know that strength, then the question is, where do people get rewarded for that strength? But even before that, you can just take the job you have right now. Do you hate everything about the job, or do you like certain things? Do you have problems with every part of the job, or are there some where you really thrive? So again, we usually take a negative approach even to this kind of idea. And a better thing is, when am I happy? When am I energized? When do I enjoy what I'm doing? Even if this slice of my job is only 2.4% of my total work, when do I really go, oh, I get to do that? Oh, it's time for that. And when do you really also on the opposite side try to procrastinate and stop doing things and get away from things, get out of doing things, put them off? But start with what's working, because sometimes we can feel like there's no way, like people go, oh, that's nice, find where you fit, but you don't understand. Start small and see if you can't get 2.4 more percent of that activity at your job, and see if that higher level of performance doesn't start to change the way your boss sees you. Or then once you know what that slice of your job that works for you, start asking, what's another job like that? Are there other jobs even in this company that have more of those responsibilities? And all you're trying to do is start stretching the alignment, right? Stretching those times in which you have that success, which then starts to drive out those times where the spotlight is on your weaknesses. So it's really two major steps. You need to know how your strengths and weaknesses are connected, because if you don't know what the upside is, if you go, well, I'm lazy, so what am I supposed to do with that, Dave? Where do they want lazy people? You have to know, okay, lazy people are oftentimes satisfied and content with the life that they have. And where can you get rewarded for being satisfied and content with what you have and not necessarily wanting that much more? And there are plenty of jobs where they quite honestly don't want you to want more and try to move up and try to change things. You know, I think of a state government job, for example, where you're just supposed to come in and do it and be consistent and be reliable. And gradually over time, you'll get paid a little bit more and you'll have a nice pension and everything's going to be fine. And if you're already pretty happy with what you've got and you're already doing pretty good, there are plenty of environments where nobody's asking you to be a go-getter and it's not a fast-paced environment. So any weakness has a corresponding strength. You have to know what the corresponding strength is, and then you have to start looking. And again, you don't have to just go, oh, where am I supposed to find it? In the situations you're already in the life that you've had, when have you been rewarded for being who you are instead of trying to be somebody else? When have people seen the strength instead of the weakness? And how do you slowly or quickly, depending on your approach, how can you expand those situations and those opportunities? And most importantly, if you can't find the right fit, you can create it. I started my own business. I know a guy with dyslexia who runs an SEO search engine optimization business, and he's a sculptor. That's not a job you're going to find online. He created his own life, right? He created his own job. He created his own business. And so you can either try to find the right fit, or slowly over time, you can get greedier and say, I'm going to create the perfect fit for me. And I'm going to do 100% things that fit with me. And I'm not going to compromise.
David, I have more introspecting to do. Pink Goldfish, which you co-wrote with Stan Phelps, that had a lot of exercises I went through. I'm going to go back, re-listen to that part we just talked about here, the assignment. And once we do, how do I go deeper with you? I've already read Pink Goldfish. I recommend it to anyone who hasn't read it after listening to the Stan episode. I need to go grab Freak Factor. Tell us how we can support you.
Yeah, that's the start. I mean, you can go to the website, drendall.com. So drendall.com. It's got Freak Factor on there. It's got a 30-minute version of the talk. So if you're like, I'm not a big reader, just click the button. It's a free video that links up with YouTube, and you can watch a keynote version of the Freak Factor, the assessments on there. If you're like, I'm not buying a book, that's fine. I'm not trying to sell you anything. The assessment's right on there as well. There's also a kids version of the book that's also a video. So if you have a child in your life, or you're thinking about that relationship you have with someone as a parent, that's for young kids. And there's also a kids version of the assessment. So if you're thinking about this as it relates to parenting one of your children, you can show them that video. Like you said, Pink Goldfish is on there. And this what we're talking about here is, if somebody like Pink Goldfish, that's the business version of Freak Factor, right? That's the marketing and strategy version of Freak Factor. I learned that weaknesses could be strengths personally. And then Stan and I showed people how that's also true for businesses. So your business has weaknesses that can also be strengths. So if somebody, if Pink Goldfish resonated with them, and we did a little personal branding stuff in Pink Goldfish, right, where we showed the personal applications of that as well, as at least when it comes to career. And so if somebody wants to go farther with that, Freak Factor is the personal, relational, managerial version of Pink Goldfish. It's the foundation that Pink Goldfish was built on.
All of that's in the show notes. Easy peasy. All free stuff. You don't have to go and buy anything. The keynote sounds like a great step in the door to better understand these concepts. And I don't know what to say. I've got some work to do, my friend. I appreciate you coming on and your insightful feedback you've provided today. I'm at a loss of words. You got me at a loss of words, my friend.
That's fine. I got plenty for everybody.
Maybe we'll have you back. Maybe we'll have you and Stan together. We'll see what happens.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.